show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, middle of the week, hump day, downhill to Friday, Wednesday, daggum, getting right on top of the end of August, into the bargain. It is the 29th of August, I'm Bob Kincaid, this is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, your home for progressive conversation radio, listener supported. Yes, indeed. And it's a lovely day here. I hope, it's probably raining somewhere, and probably some of the somewheres that it's raining, it's badly needed, and other places, like the Gulf Coast, not so much. It is interesting to note, however, that the response to Hurricane Isaac has been significantly different, I dare say, than the response to Hurricane Katrina some years back. Search and rescue boats were already out and about. Plaquemines Parish, I'm probably mispronouncing that, it's probably pronounced something that has nothing to do with how it's spelled. But big parts of it were underwater, and a number of people have been rescued because, well, whatever else one cares to say about this president, he does believe in the idea to some degree of government. And as such, the government of we the people was more ready than it was those years ago when hell blew ashore on the northern Gulf Coast of Mississippi and Louisiana. I've been trying to read the follow-ups all day on what's going on with Isaac. And you do so with a just a sorry feeling, hoping that it works out. And that's where my thoughts have been. I heard from my sister down on the Gulf Coast in Mobile, Alabama. She said it wasn't so bad down that way. They've been hammered in their own right in times past. But it moved ashore, backed off, and then went ashore again. That's a double whammy hurricane. But never you mind. Yes, I know it's prayer meeting Wednesday. I don't have it in me to do the shtick with a hurricane battering one of my favorite places in the United States. I don't have it in me. I wonder if we will find out a little bit about the after effects of the Deepwater Horizon disaster with what's being churned up in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, you remember the Deepwater Horizon disaster. As Joe Bagent noted, who was badly missed, what kind of a nation turns a discussion into of an environmental disaster like the Deepwater Horizon disaster, what kind of a nation turns it into a discussion of gasoline prices and whether or not the oysters are fit to eat. Beats me. But then again, it was just a few days ago that I was tweeting a story that came from Forbes that practically had, it may as well have had little pictures of dripping fangs on it, for all intents and purposes, as it, you know, because Forbes goes out to the investor class. And, no, I say dripping fangs because, well, come on. It was all about whether or not we could expect to see oil and gasoline prices go up, and there was a sort of yay quality to it. A sort of breathy anxiousness. And I find that disgusting. So hopefully we will, we'll talk about Isaac's impact in some sort of different fashion. I had mentioned, by the way, I need to give you a program note. I had mentioned, by the way, that we would be joined by Guy James this evening. Before you get your hopes up, he won't be joining us this evening, but has postponed hoping for tomorrow. Guy's not feeling so great. And so hopefully he says his throat's just trashed, so he hopes to be with us tomorrow evening. So make a note of it. Share an email with you that just came in, or came in earlier today, I should say. Came in from John with one of the most most enjoyable salutations I've seen. The subject matter, month's end challenge, got to beat the Swede. Hillbilicus primus. Really? I've been called a lot of things in my life, but that's the first time I've ever been called that. And I like it. Hillbilicus primus. First hillbilly. Please announce on Wednesday the 29th an over-the-top incentive. I, Johannes D., will match up to $150 in contributions that are made in the month of August in order to finish the dog month of summer in the black and get a slight start on Blessed Falls Usher September. If I'm reading the widget right, and the monthly goal is, in fact, less than $200 away. And it is. It is. And, yes, in fact, our good friend Thomas checked it out and said, yeah, we're $135 away from finishing the Horn monthly fundraiser. He said, so I saved you the trouble, Bob, and did the math. That's 1 at 135, 3 at 45, 5 at 27, 9 at 15, 15 at 9, 27 at 5, 45 at 3, and 135 at 1. I think at this point we can say that we're having a little bit of sport at the expense of Bob's mathematical challengedness. But that's where we are, and hopefully we'll wipe that out tonight. And thank you to all of you who have come to the aid and support of the Horn in this month, because this is something we have to make. We have reached a point where we can no longer fall short. We have to make it every month, because financial situations have changed, and we just have to make it every month. If we don't, you know, we'll make it. We got Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. We'll make it. If we make it in August, that means there's a September, but then we have to make September. I wish it was not so, but it is. So the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. The snail mail address is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. It is as follows. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, stands for Personal Mailbox, 318 Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801. And a gentle reminder, do not make checks or money orders payable to Bob Kincaid. I don't get the money. It goes for paying the Horn's bills, and so it has to be made out to the Horn or Head On Radio Network. Sandra with an early email coming in regarding preparedness and what's going on in the Gulf Coast with Isaac. Sandra noting, and of course, there are less poor folks, perhaps. And then again, there's that sinkhole. Yeah, it's officially known as the sinkhole, the Louisiana sinkhole. It's expanding. Bayou Cornet has been evacuated at one point or another. Or maybe it's just Bayou Corn. I don't see an accent ague over the E. The text to the link Sandra sent said, bubbles in the waters of Bayou Corn in Assumption Parish, about 50 miles south of Baton Rouge in Louisiana, U.S., concerned residents in mid-May. Then suddenly a massive sinkhole appeared in on August the 3rd, forced the closure of nearby Highway 70 after a gas line along that route bent and led to fears of an explosion. And then this. Officials believe the sinkhole could give off radiation or cause explosions that would harm local residents. Nearly 150 residents were asked to evacuate their homes on August 13th after the sinkhole swallowed nearby trees. Assumption Parish Police jury continues monitoring Bayou Corn and Grand Bayou waterway bubbles. And it's huge. Massive. It's now 145 meters, that's 476 feet, by 640 feet. And you don't, I mean, they don't know why. Although it does sit next door to Texas Brine Company, LLC. There's a plugged and abandoned salt cavern nearby. There's also Crosstex Energy LP facility nearby. Yeah. Wonder why that sinkhole's opened up. Now, let's see. This is kind of sleazy rice night at the Clavern in Tampa. Last night was Governor Chris Krispy Kreme and who else? Governor allegedly Nikki Haley. But I was reminded by Vince that she's another one of those Republicans going by an alias. Kind of like Mitch McConnell's name isn't Mitch, it's Addison, and Joe Wilson of South Carolina's name isn't Joe, and Bobby Jindal's name isn't Bobby, it's Piyush. Well, Nikki Haley's name isn't Nikki. It's Nimrata Randhawa Haley. Nimrata, which has been shortened to Nikki. Of course, Piyush Jindal took his name, Bobby, because his favorite Brady was Bobby Brady. Marsha. I don't know where Nimrata Randhawa got her name. This is not xenophobia. I think in a non-bigoted nation, people should be able to go by their own names, like Barack Obama. Of course, if your name's Willard, you know, it engenders all of that, those creepy, people of a certain age, mind you, all of those creepy images of that movie about rats that just, yeah, see, I get shivers every time, Willard. Okay, I'm better now. But yes, Nimrata Randhawa Haley spoke last night, and she talked about those thug union bosses who tried to keep them from having a good non-union airplane plant, Boeing plant in South Carolina. You know what? Let me add Boeing aircraft to the list of things I don't want to ride in that come from states where jackleg non-union workers make stuff. You know, and it's a shame. I love the Volkswagen Passat. I think it's one of the most wonderful sedans out there, and it comes in a diesel. Not that I could ever afford to buy one. But if I could afford to buy a Volkswagen diesel, I wouldn't, because it's made by jackleg non-union workers in the Confederacy. So too with BMW crossover vehicles, the X this or the X that, I wouldn't get in one of those things for love nor money, because it's made by some jackleg non-union worker in South Carolina. And like I said, let's add Boeing to the list. You know, at least with Airbus, I know it's being built by professionals who have union representation and health care and pensions and don't live in a state of total desperation from one paycheck to the next. So I think I'm going to try to make sure when I have to fly, which I hate doing, that I see if I can't get myself on. Well, the regional jets are usually out of Charleston are usually Embraer, which comes out of Brazil, or Canadairs, which come out of, obviously, Canada. And then there's that godforsaken Saab. Sorry, Scott, that I will never get on again. I've never had a good flight on one of those miserable things. Every flight I've ever had, either from West Virginia to D.C. or from D.C. back to West Virginia, aboard one of those godforsaken Saabs, has been like, what? I don't know, a bombing run over Hanoi. You know, dodging the ack-ack. I think piloting one of those things is some sort of punishment. I saw a Coca-Cola actually go into freefall in the last time I was on one of those nightmare aircraft. But long hauls, I'll see if I can't fly an Airbus. Boeing. So I don't want to run the risk of getting on an aircraft that may have been built by some guy who doesn't know if he's going to have a job tomorrow because he doesn't have any kind of representation. He doesn't have any kind of collective bargaining rights. He doesn't have a seat at the table. And if you're not at the table, as my buddy Rick Smith notes, you're on the menu. And every single worker at that Boeing plant in South Carolina are on the menu. Right? Nimrata Randhawa, well, part of her name's Rand, son of a bitch. Oh, dear. Thanks, Marty. I think I'm walking from here on out. Don't get aboard an Airbus A320. Airbus has one production line in China, and they're opening a new production line in Alabama. Son of a... Marty says, and I'm an Airbus fan. Dadgummit. Well, but that's the way of the world, isn't it? Because even the decent things manufactured by people who are real craft experts and have living wages and social safety nets and pensions and health care and all of that, that model... It's not just under attack here. It's not even under attack here. They've won. I mean, let's at least grow up and realize they won. We have almost full metastasization of the cancer that is right to work laws all over this country now. But she blathered on. Oh, who else talked? I guess that goober from West Virginia wanted to talk about, you know, how Jesus put the coal in the ground for us to dominionate the universe. I guess he talked sometime yesterday. I don't know. Don't care. Idiots. But I did care. I promised myself, you know, I did this. I promised myself. I promised it. I said it on the air last night before. I said, I'm not going to watch any of this crap. But then, like a dummy, I went looking across the TV trying to find like a college football preview, and then like the mouse who suddenly get, oh, is that a cobra? And funny, I can't look away. There was Willard's wife, Willardette, because there's something about her that strikes me as being just as ratty as he is. No, Willardette gave her big speech last night. And I will go this far with her. She was not as obnoxious to behold as Godzilla from Wasilla, Caribou Barbie, Mussolini, you know, the woman who can see Russia from her house. And but it goes no further than that, because ultimately, while the former half-term governor of Alaska's speech at her convention was annoying and obnoxious and dippy and ignorant, there was one moment of dog whistling in Willard's wife's speech that made me... even though I'm not a right winger, I'm sensitive to dog whistling, you know. And I what? I'm just a little. I'm the political equivalent of a groundhog, you know. In Pennsylvania and areas like that, in Pennsylvania, the groundhog is referred to as a whistle pig. Did you know that? Well, if you're an outdoorsy type in Pennsylvania, you do. A whistle pig. Because when you whistle at a groundhog, they'll stand up and look at you. And that's when you shoot them. Oh, I'm a political whistle pig. And once I had locked eyes with the cobra, man, how many metaphors can I mix into this? Once I'd locked eyes with the cobra, I couldn't look away. You know, she's standing there in her blonde by choice hair and her blood red dress. And so, I mean, it gets a little confusing after 9 p.m. here in the studio, because I got Rick Smith going on one machine. I got Mike Malloy going on another. And usually that's enough to keep me kind of cross-eyed. But then you add that into the mix. Willard's wife. And most of it was platitudinous horse shit. See, I can say that because we're on the interweb tubes. But I waited. I didn't even cheat and go look up the text of her speech. And it was kind of funny, after the speech was over, Willard had to walk out. And he's a freaking robot. Must kiss wife. Must kiss wife. Must kiss wife. Kissing wife. Kissed wife. Hold arm around wife. Wave to zombies. Hi, zombies. Hi. But no, there came a moment when I caught the dog whistle and turned around And lucky for me, it's available to share. Because I'm waiting to see if this thing is going to get any legs. We spent all last week talking about the adjective legitimate in front of rape. In front of the noun rape. Well, friends, neighbors, boys and girls, class, the password is real marriage. This.
Tonight we salute you and sing your praises.
She's talking about the women folk. Because that was a part of the speech. They're going to praise the women folk at the same time that they're going to, send them back. Come on, honey. Give me your shoes. That's right. Right. Back to the kitchen with you. Right. I'll have you pregnant in a couple of days. It's where you belong. Meanwhile, one other thing, and gosh, I hope this gets out there to the knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing faithful. You know, the scurrying little cockroaches that run out to the ballot box every 4 years to save the little fetuses. Willard's got a sister. Yeah, I know. Little rat teeth. Willard's got a sister who is out there trying to do damage control. Willard's sister is trying to reach out to the women folk via an interview with the National Journal. Her name is Jane Romney. What are we going to name the boy, Willard? What are we going to name the girl, Jane? What? In this interview in National Journal, she says, Mitt Romney would never make abortions illegal as president. Jane Romney said when National Journal asked her about the subject after a Women for Mitt event, he's not going to be touching any of that. It's not his focus. And I'm not touching him, not touching. Democratic warnings that abortion rights are under threat are an ungrounded fear tactic, Jane Romney said. That's what women are afraid of, but that's conjured. Conjured? I mean, we joke with the word conjured here. I'll say something about one of y'all, and the next thing you know, the phone will ring, and I'll pick it up, and you'll be there. And I'll go, oh, damn, I conjured you. But that's tongue-in-cheek. What the hell is this? That's what women are afraid of, but that's conjured. You know, that's witchcraft. They're doing witchcraft over it. No, she didn't say that, but that's the implication. Personally, I don't think abortion should be used as a football in the political arena. National Journal going on to say, the Republican platform does not specify any exceptions in calling for its ban on abortion. But as Jane Romney put it, Mitt's much more in the middle when it comes to abortion. Please, please, get this out to the narrow people and the Randall Terry bunch and Operation Snowflake Rescue or whatever the hell they're calling it these days. Get this out there. The sister of Willard Romney has said he's not going to be touching any of that. It's not his focus. No, we know what his focus is. Zombie-eyed granny starving. I don't think that means that the grannies are zombie-eyed. No. I don't know. Maybe in his case it's rat-faced, the granny starving. But no, Anne wanted to celebrate the woman. You know, that half of the species that was created from the male. Jesus. I thought about this ever. It's not often that I hear something and it just grabs hold of me and gnaws at me. Because I don't know what you're about to hear actually means. And it's not just because it's word salad. It is that. But I don't know what it means. I know she meant to insult someone because she is a snide, snarky, hate-filled woman. I'm just not sure who she was trying to insult. I've got a couple of guesses, but I don't have it nailed down. It's kind of like me not understanding Sheldon Adelson's passion for the Republican ticket and having to wait until Andy could explain it to me last night during our conversation with Harry. I don't know. No. So, I mean, this is a lengthy clip, but we'll work our way through it, okay?
I'm not sure if men really understand this, but I don't think there's a woman in America who really expects her life to be easy. In our own ways, we all know better.
Yeah. Got a couple of Cadillacs, got a house with an elevator for the car, but I don't expect life to be easy. I don't think there's a woman in America who really expects her life to be easy. So by God, my husband will make sure that it's not. We want to live up to your expectations.
You know what? That's fine. We don't want easy.
But if you happen to marry easy, then easy's nice, right?
But the last few years have been harder than they needed to be.
For who? Not you! No, no, no! You've had Rafalka to help you get over your MS. You've had horsey therapy. You've got everything in the world that you could possibly want, except a rock's egg as big as a diamond. And I'm sure you're working on that. These last few years have been harder than they had needed to be. That may be the one moment where this Harridan actually spoke the truth. This country, this ship of state, could have been righted. The hold could have been bailed out, and we could be sailing on a course towards a safe harbor. But we have a Republican Congress to thank for the fact that we are not. We have a Republican Congress whose Senate Minority Leader declared that the only mission of the Republican Party should be making Barack Obama a one-term president, not fixing a crashed economy that they helped to crash.
It's all the little things that Pat, the price at the pump you just can't believe, the grocery bills that just get bigger, all those things that used to be free, like school sports, are now one more bill to pay.
Wait. Do you get that? Because I heard that. It's all the little things. That price at the pump you just can't believe, the grocery bills that just get bigger, all those things that used to be free. Yeah, Ann, your gasoline's free. Yeah, Ann, your groceries are free. Because when what you spend on groceries is probably not 1/10,000% of your household income, it's almost like it's free. You don't feel it. And school sports, they're now one more bill to pay. How would you know, sweetheart? Your kids are grown. Your sons have multi-million dollar trust funds. So don't expect us to believe that you're out there sweating grandson's cleats or granddaughter's tutus, okay? I'm sorry, that was sexist. Granddaughter's cleats or grandson's tutus. Okay, now we're being equal opportunity here.
It's all the little things that pile up to become big things. And the big things, the good jobs, the chance at college, that home you want to buy, just get harder. Everything has become harder. We're too smart to know there aren't easy answers, but we're not dumb enough to accept that there aren't better answers.
word salad. Clap, white people, clap! Oh, yeah, but by the way, as Sandra mentioned last night, Arter Davis, the 2012 Republican Party answer to Zell Miller, spoke yesterday. Jesus.
And that is where this boy I met at a high school dance comes in. His name is Mitt Romney, and you should really get to know him.
No, Ann, his name's Willard, and you should quit lying to the crowd. And you should get to know him. As if we don't. As if we haven't seen him walking around and with the little robot thing giving him instructions. You know, it's amazing what the convergence is between life and fiction. Because this has already been covered to a certain extent. And rather a long time back at that. I think 1972. And of course, it was covered by one of my heroes, who would be embarrassed to be listed as anybody's hero, but he was. I'm talking, of course, about Kurt Vonnegut. I'm talking about his book, Breakfast of Champions, which is in part posited on a man who thinks that the rest of the world have become robots and he is the only individual with free will. Just wait long enough. The science fiction will become reality fact. Not kidding. I just happen to have Breakfast of Champions here in my hand. I keep Mr. Vonnegut handy for just such occasions. It's rather fascinating. He sends his hero, the hero of many of his books, Kilgore Trout, out to a little typical American burg in Ohio. Where he will run across Dwayne Hoover. And Dwayne Hoover is the person for whom Kilgore Trout has unwittingly written the book. There in the cocktail lounge, Dwayne Hoover's bad chemicals suddenly decided, because Dwayne Hoover has syphilis. Dwayne Hoover's bad chemicals suddenly decided that it was time for Dwayne to demand from Kilgore Trout the secrets of life. "Give me the message," cried Dwayne. He tottered up from his own banquette, crashed down again next to Trout, throwing off heat like a steam radiator. "The message, please!" And here, Dwayne did something extraordinarily unnatural. He did it because I wanted him to, I being Vonnegut. It was something I have ached to have a character do for years and years. Dwayne did to Trout what the Duchess did to Alice in Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. He rested his chin on poor Trout's shoulder, dug in with his chin. "The message?" he said, digging in his chin, digging in his chin. Trout made no reply. He had hoped to get through what little remained of his life without ever having to touch another human being. Dwayne's chin on his shoulder was as shattering as buggery to Trout. "Is this it? Is this it?" said Dwayne, snatching up Trout's novel. "Now it can be told." "Yes, that's it," croaked Trout. To his tremendous relief, Dwayne removed his chin from his shoulder. Dwayne now began to read hungrily, as though starved for print, and the speed-reading course he had taken at the Young Men's Christian Association allowed him to make a perfect pig of himself with pages and words. "Dear sir, poor sir, brave sir," he read, "you are an experiment by the Creator of the universe. You are the only creature in the entire universe who has free will. You are the only one who has to figure out what to do next and why. Everybody else is a robot, a machine. Some persons seem to like you, and other persons seem to hate you, and you must wonder why. They are simply liking machines and hating machines. You are pooped and demoralized," read Dwayne. "Why wouldn't you be? Of course it is exhausting having to reason all the time in a universe which wasn't meant to be reasonable." In a universe that wasn't meant to be reasonable. And there you have, in a way, the convergence between futuristic fantasy and modern fact. A robot, a hating machine, is running for president. But his spouse wants you to get to know him better. Clap, robots.
I can tell you why I fell in love with him. He was tall, laughed a lot. He was nervous. Girls like that. It shows the guy's a little intimidated.
Really? What did you do, Ann? Beat all of that out of him? Laughed a lot? Has anybody ever actually heard Willard Romney laugh? Ha, ha, ha.
He was nice to my parents, but he was also really glad when they weren't around. I don't mind that, but...
Cue the Leave It to Beaver theme, or maybe Father Knows Best.
More than anything, he made me laugh.
Then we know she's psychotic. What is there? Hey, honey, guess what I did today? Yeah, I screwed 7,000 people out of their pensions and their health care and put them out of work and moved the plant to China. Yeah, oh, I kill me. Oh, that's a knee slapper. I tell you what, I'm gonna have to have an extra glass of milk when I tell it. Oh, goodness me.
Some of you might not know this, but I am the granddaughter of a Welsh coal miner.
Well, cue Loretta Lynn. She was born a coal miner's granddaughter. I'm a coal miner's son, coal miner's grandson, and a coal miner's great-grandson, but... What? Now, the coal culture around here acts as though it's some sort of a badge of honor. It's an accident of birth. She could be the granddaughter of the Gorgon, for all I know. Only that would make some genetic sense.
He was determined that his kids get out of the mines. My dad got his first job when he was 6 years old in a little village in Wales called Nantyhufflin, cleaning bottles at the Collier's Arms. When he was 15, Dad came to America. In our country, he's...
Now, wait. I'm going to need some help from you guys. Is this the father or grandfather that they baptized into Mormonism after he was dead, who actually happened to be a serious free thinker, non-believer, non-theist, and they baptized him into the Kolob Club after he was dead? Is this the guy? Yeah, I saw that too. I saw a still photo of it. A question coming in from a listener. Did I see what I thought I saw? I was wondering if you too, Bob, for a short few seconds, viewed Ann Romney curtsy on the stage prior to her love speech. Just wondering. I thought for a second this could be a subtle gesture that one day she may view herself being curtsied too. Just one woman out here who remains awake. Yeah, I saw that. What the was that? I thought the curtsy went out with high button greaves. No, I would not do that to you, Michael, or anyone else. All that talk about robots. Michael writing, we're getting Styx's Mr. Roboto for a bumper, ain't we? No, you're not. Might be the daughter of the she might be the daughter of the Gorgon, which would make more sense. Ray, of course, chiming in. Not to the gargoyle, it wouldn't. Curtsy. But no, none of that approaches the offensiveness of this one comment, and I'm going to get to it.
Saw hope and an opportunity to escape from poverty. He moved to a small town in the great state of Michigan. Michigan!
Michigan! You know, where I was born, where Willard was born, where Willard said nobody ever asked to see his birth certificate. Ha, ha, ha! Silly Kenyon!
There he started the business, one he built by himself, by the way.
You silly peons! We will use your infrastructure as we see fit, and you dare say nothing about it. Sit down and shut up until I tell you to clap again.
He raised a family and he became mayor of our town. My dad would often remind my brothers and me how fortunate we were to grow up in a place like America.
Yeah, that's great, Anne. Tell us about the part where he converts to Mormonism. Oh, wait. Did he not do that till after he was dead?
He wanted us to have every opportunity that came with life in this country, and so he pushed us to be our best and give our all. Inside the houses that lined the streets of our town, there were a lot of good fathers teaching their sons and daughters those same values. I didn't know it at the time, but one of those dads was my future father-in-law, George Romney.
Clap, trolls, clap!
Mitt's dad never graduated from college.
The Gremlin. That's another great Romney idea. The AMC Gremlin. Yeah. You know, the car that Wayne and Garth drive, right?
He became a carpenter. He worked hard, he became the head of a car company, and then the governor of Michigan. When Mitt and I met and fell in love, we were determined not to let anything stand in the way of our life together. I was an Episcopalian, he was a Mormon. We were very young, both still in college. There were many reasons to delay marriage, and you know what? We just didn't care. We got married and moved into a basement apartment.
Oh, clap for a basement apartment, you morons. You'll all be living in one with... Jesus God, this is vomit-inducing. I'm sorry. I'm going to be done with this soon.
We walked to class together, shared the housekeeping, ate a lot of pasta and tuna fish.
What? Ate a lot of... Oh, pasta. For a minute there, I thought she was still going for the Appalachian vote. I thought she was going to say, I ate a lot of possum. Yeah, and tuna fish.
Our desk was a door propped up on sawhorses. Our dining room table was a fold-down ironing board in the kitchen.
And the basement was the basement of a log cabin.
But those were the best days. Then...
Bullshit. Tell me, Anne, tell me that you don't like the couple of Cadillacs. Tell me you don't like Rafalka. Tell me, Anne, you don't like the nice little, country mansion on the shores of Lake Winnipesaukee. I can say that word. How about that? And I've never even been there.
Our first son came along. All at once, I'm 22 years old with a baby and a husband who's going to business school and law school at the same time. And I can tell you, probably like every other girl who finds herself in a new life far from family and friends, with a new baby and a new husband, that it dawned on me that I had absolutely no idea what I was getting into.
That was 42 years ago, and I handed the kid off to the maid, and, well, I haven't seen him since. Not really sure what he looks like.
Years ago, I've survived. We now have 5 sons and 18 beautiful grandchildren.
Some of whom look curiously like Osmonds.
I'm still in love with that boy I met at a high school dance, and he still makes me laugh.
Good for you, Anne. Good for you.
I read somewhere that Mitt and I have a storybook marriage. Well, let me tell you something. In the storybooks I read, there never were long, long, rainy winter afternoons in a house with 5 boys screaming at once. And those storybooks never...
I wonder what they were screaming over. They weren't screaming because they were hungry, because they've never known a hungry day in their life. They weren't screaming because you were being kicked out of the house because you've been financially supported all your life. They weren't screaming because they weren't adequately clothed, because, you know, while you said that George Romney, you just sort of breezed past that ran an automobile company part. Yeah. A lot of pasta and tuna. You know what? There's a word. Okay, pasta and tuna. If the tuna is coming in steak form, and the pasta is done up you get the idea. Farfalla alla, you know, whatever the Italian word is for tuna. Yeah.
They seem to have a chapter called MS or breast cancer. A storybook marriage? Nope, not at all. What Mitt Romney and I have is a real marriage.
And there it is. A real marriage. Like I said, I'm not sure who that insult was delivered to. Was that delivered to the millions of gay people in America who want the same rights as Willard and Anne had? To marry someone that they love? To share those trials and tribulations with them? Is that who she was intending to dog whistle insult? Because while I hear the dog whistle, I don't necessarily get the meaning of it always. Because I am not sick, and I am not psychopathic, and I am not, therefore, a repiglickin. So I don't know, maybe it's a pick your hatred kind of situation. Maybe for those that hate gay people, maybe that was a dog whistle about gay folks not having real marriages. Maybe for the people who, for instance, and you know this story already, maybe for the repiglickins who threw peanuts at a dark-skinned woman operating a camera doing an honest day's work for CNN, screaming, "This is how we feed the animals!" For them, maybe it was a dog whistle about how you can't really have a marriage, a real marriage, if you're not really human. Because remember, that church she converted into, when were they married? What year? Yeah, before the Mormon church declared that persons of dark skin who had previously been determined were dark-skinned because they wore the brand of Cain and the curse from the Almighty Living God for having committed the first murder, that those dark-skinned people weren't fully human. So maybe if you're not fully human, you can't have a real marriage. Or maybe your marriage isn't real if your daddy was a Kenyan and a Muslim. This is a sickening degree of I keep saying dog whistling. I want a better word. This is a sort of, I don't know, Barbie bigotry. Prejudice with a purse. We have a real marriage. And again, it's not just that she says it, real marriage. It's the way she emphasizes it.
And those storybooks never seem to have a chapters called MS or breast cancer. A storybook marriage? Nope, not at all. What Mitt Romney and I have is a real marriage.
You know, we didn't jump over a broom like Barack and that woman he's married to. That's not a real marriage. That's just something they did back there in Roots. We have a real marriage. It's that punch on the word real. And, of course, getting out and flogging being a breast cancer survivor. Lady, you had what it took to survive breast cancer. If you were like the untold millions in this country who don't have insurance coverage, you would be in the dirt. And Willard would be on his second wife. Because you, Ann Romney, you are a child of privilege. And she is so blind to the privilege that she doesn't even have any idea of it. And that's one of the... That's one of the problems with privilege. Ray asking the question, is this the part where Edward R. Murrow takes away the folks' illusions? Andy writing in, what baloney? What effing baloney? Mr. Bob, it's because of her and her subhuman husband we have no money for high school sports. The Romneys and their top 1% friends don't contribute to our society. At a 13.9% tax rate and probably lower during the decade in the new millennium, they paid most of their taxes to foreign governments as shown by the 2010 returns and looking back through IRS Form 1116 foreign tax credits revisions. And because of Bain and Mitten's predatory private equity strategy, we deindustrialized America, destroying the tax base, so we have no money for high school sports. 30 years of outsourcing, packing up factories, and moving them to China have decimated this country. This pig has no right to even be a citizen of this country, let alone run for president. He has severely damaged our nation, Look at Sensata in Illinois. 170 workers at a profitable plant thrown to the curb and forced to train their Chinese colleagues. He wouldn't even deviate from the strategy while he was running for president. What scum! Pure craven hypocrisy on stage at the Republican convention. Every word of what Andy wrote is true. And yet, you may wind up having to refer to him as the president, the 145th, or the 145th? Now, see, there I am, time traveling. As the 45th president of the United States. Jesus Christ. Irish Dave. The slogan of the Troll L Corp is replicants, more human than human. Ray. God, I love the way your mind works. I'm surprised Barry Manilow isn't running the campaign. Irish Dave also wants to know, so do 1L Michelle and Marcus have a real marriage? There you go. Marty says, I have the sound all the way down. Let me know when you're done playing clips. Has she mentioned how nice her car elevator is? Marty, I can't let you know when I'm done playing clips if you've got the sound down. Just take one for the team, Marty. Just take one for the team. We do have suggestions for bumper music. Not going to use it, but I got to give it. Michael's in the early running for the toaster. Hey, Bob, you got the theme from the Jeffersons handy? Moving on. Oh, pasta don't burn on the stove. Tuna don't fry on the grill. Oh, God. Oh, that hurt. Yeah, and by the way, one of the Romney sons, his name is Tag. Now, we all know that Willard's running mate, the zombie-eyed granny starver, Charles Pierce, you genius, Paul R. Ayan. It's funny how you can get Ayan out of Ryan. Thank you, Dave. One of the Romney brood is Tag. Tag. As for Mitt Romney, a decidedly awkward aspect for him with respect to his large number of grandchildren is that, as the New York Times reported, at least three of them were born to his son Tag through the use of in vitro fertilization and surrogacy. Furthermore, according to Mother Jones, two of Tag's brothers reportedly have struggled with infertility issues and resorted to IVF as well. But Romney is well remembered in pro-choice and religious right circles alike for his answer of absolutely when Mike Huckabee, a favorite of the religious right, asked if he would support a constitutional amendment declaring that life begins at conception, an amendment which, if passed, would not only outlaw abortion and many forms of contraception, but would also criminalize IVF, in vitro fertilization, the very procedure by which some of his grandchildren came into being. Thank you, Dave. Tag. That's just a short form, like mitt is a shortened form of mittens. And what I was saying a minute ago is that we all know that the zombie-eyed granny starver is an acolyte of Ayn Rand, bragging about having given away many copies of Atlas shrugged to poor, unsuspecting young staffers. Well, tag is a short form, too. Tag, you know, because like I said, we know there's an Ayn Rand connection to Paul Ryan. We know there's an Ayn Rand connection to Ron Paul. After all, his son's name is Rand. We know that two of Mussolini's daughters were named after booze, right? No, wait, that has nothing to do with Ayn Rand, sorry. Harvey's Bristol Cream, right? Yeah. Piper is a wine or a beer or something. Zizidik. No, it's a sparkling wine, I think. And there's one more that anyway, that has nothing to do with Ayn Rand. Tag Romney . His full name is Taggart. Now, he was either named after a character in Blazing Saddles or he was named after the heroine from Atlas Shrugged, Dagny Taggart. Oh, Ray, you're a sick, 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 delightfully sick puppy. You've never been in a house on a rainy day with five screaming boys. Ray saying, they were screaming because Dad was coming with a tub of butter. There. The Bachman marriage. The Irish Dave. Out there working for tonight's toaster, too. The Bachman marriage. A fairy tale. Let it stand where it is. Taggart. Dagny Taggart. The heroine of Atlas Shrugged. A little more Ayn Rand lionizing there. What are we going to name the baby, Willard? Let's name him Taggart. I love those sex scenes, those dirty, dirty sex scenes in Atlas Shrugged. You know, like we played at that one night. Taggart. Real marriage. Because, you know, Agnes and me, we don't have a car elevator. I guess we don't have a real marriage. We haven't put thousands of people out of work and giggled all the way to the bank with their pensions in our pockets. So I guess we don't have a real marriage. I don't talk about it a lot, but Agnes has a chronic pain syndrome. Chronic pain problem. But I haven't been able to get her a high-stepping dressage horse for her to have therapy with, so I guess we don't have a real marriage. These daggum disgusting repiglicans, they've got an adjective problem is what they've got. Legitimate rape. Real marriage. Oh, yeah, I got a legitimate rape story, too. I think I finally figured out what legitimate means in legitimate rape. And actually, what a woman's body has a way of shutting that whole thing down actually means. It was there right in front of our faces all the time. All the time. I figured it out with the help of this horrifying story. comes out of Ohio. It is disturbing. Dateline is today. It's from the Columbus Dispatch. It was a quiet Sunday morning as the motorist made his way along a country road in Muskingum County, but what he drove upon spoke of a night of terror and horrible violence. "I have a woman right here. She's burnt severely. She's been raped and she's been beat up," the man told a 911 dispatcher. The woman, he said, was lying in the middle of the road, naked and scorched over much of her body with a rope around her neck. On the 911 tape, she can be heard moaning. The dispatcher asks the man whether the victim can give her name. He replies that she's so injured, "I can barely understand her." 7 minutes after the 8:34 a.m. call, the same man calls 911 again, imploring the medics to get there quickly because she's a mess. We talk like that in the country. She's a mess. I mean it, she's a mess. Y'all get here. Well, I mean, not okay, I can't do the Ohio accent. I'll have to rely on y'all, somebody else. The dispatcher promises that help is on the way, but you're quite a ways out there. He was about 70 miles from Columbus. The story continues. It was a miracle she was still alive. Authorities say she probably was set on fire. She somehow made her way from the woods to the road with much of her body covered in fourth-degree burns, which go as deep as muscle and bone. Muskingum County Sheriff Matt Lutz called the attack one of the most gruesome things I've ever seen in 23 and a half years in law enforcement. The woman, whose name isn't being used because she's a rape victim, was in very critical condition at Ohio State University's Wexner Medical Center yesterday. Authorities are still trying to piece together what happened to the victim, a 29-year-old woman from Canton. Lutz didn't know when the woman was attacked, but he said authorities had found a crime scene in woods in the nearby Tri-Valley wildlife area. He wouldn't give details. He also said the attack didn't appear to be random, but he didn't say why. WBNS-TV said the woman's father told a Cleveland television station that he last saw his daughter on Friday morning. She and a friend borrowed his truck and said they would return in a few minutes. When they didn't, the father started to look for her and eventually called authorities. "This is a vicious animal," the father said, of whoever nearly killed his daughter. "They ought to be taken off the street and put away." Authorities spent the day in Canton gathering evidence. Among items they took were gas cans, although Lutz and other officials wouldn't say where they were found. Law enforcement authorities are asking anyone in the area with knowledge of what happened to please come forward. Like I said, out of that story, I figured out what Todd Akin meant when he said, "A woman's body has ways of shutting that down," and he did not misspeak, and he did not speak an untruth. Because in the Republican mind, as Paleolithic as it is, it's not even Paleolithic, it's subhuman. You know, you look in the fossil record of the Paleolithic age and you realize the old Stone Age, that's what that means. Even Paleolithic peoples were capable of manifestations of extreme tenderness and beauty. So to suggest that Republican thinking is Paleolithic is unfair to Paleolithic people. What Republicans are is in their attitudes, their approaches to life, is less than human. It wouldn't even be welcome among chimpanzees. It certainly wouldn't be welcome within the family structures of gorillas. I can't think of an animal that resembles the behavior, the remorseless hatred that attends Republicans. But I do understand now what they mean. When Todd Akin said a woman's body has a way of shutting that down, what he means is that when a woman is legitimately raped, she should be also dead. Because a dead woman can shut down insemination by her rapist. That's what that means. That story should be read in its entirety to the Republican National Convention and the entire body there, from the ones who threw peanuts at an African American camera woman screaming, "This is how we feed the animals," to the ones who chanted, "USA, USA, USA," when a delegate from Puerto Rico stepped onto the stage. They should be read that story and then simply asked, would you tell us if that was a legitimate rape? And do you really mean a woman's body has a way of shutting that down? Do you really mean by dying? I don't like to make promises I can't keep. But after what I witnessed on the TV box last night, I think it's much more likely that I will not watch anything tonight. Or maybe I will. God, it's sickening. Just sickening. But at least, we know that Willard and Ann Romney have a real marriage. Remember, there is a matching challenge on the table for tonight. Johannes, John, offering to beat the Swede and put a little exclamation point on the month by matching up to the first $150 in your choice of combinations that come in. That will finish it off. And then Thursday and Friday of this week, no fundraising. Won't that be nice? And we will be guaranteed a September. And that'll be even nicer. This is the home of conversation radio, progressive radio. This is the listener-supported Horn, headonradionetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. Your calls coming up next.
by the next and said I had a look in the mirror. Lay by the next and said I had a look in the mirror. Lay by the next and said I had a look in the mirror. Lay.
Life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Bubble Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your bad body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
A little quicker than that, but I was writing a couple of thank you notes. I try to do that as quick as they come in. We're $55 on the way to meeting John's challenge for the evening. Only 95 to go, which will put us over the top, beat the Swede,
woohoo,
and assure us of a September here on the horn. Thank you. Thank you to all of you. It's the only way this happens. Tim from L.A. telling me in the chat room during the break, hey, Bob, we just had an earthquake. At La Brea, 6 miles from the epicenter, or Brea was 6 miles from the epicenter. It was just a 4.1. I guess just a 4.1 means that folks in Southern California don't even get out of bed, for anything less than five, kind of the way that, Guy James said that they don't even come inside in Florida for hurricanes of less than category two. Yeah. So it is 25 minutes past the hour. Thanks for tolerating the real marriage filibobster. I wish the Democrats had enough of a spine to go after that, because that was And there, that, you know, the Romneys have said, and their surrogates have said, a bunch of really filthy, disgusting things in the course of this filthy, disgusting campaign. But that takes the cake. That real marriage takes the cake. Because remember, in most states in this union, when two women who love each other, one of them gets sick, say, with, you know, MS or breast cancer, Ann Romney, they aren't even legally guaranteed the right to be at the other's bedside during treatment in the hospital because they don't have a real marriage, Ann Romney. If they have health care at all, Ann Romney. Jesus. Mean, just mean is what they are. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Ann Romney shall be forever known as Rand Romney.
How about Ann Romney?
Well, hey, there's A and Ryan. I mean, we're going to run out of. It's going to get pretty confusing. We got Robot Romney. We got A and Ryan and Rand Romney. Just to make everybody remember.
And Taggart. Don't forget Taggart.
Yeah, and Taggart Rand too. You know, Taggart. That sounds like a name that you would hear on Buck Rogers in the 25th century. I'm just saying.
Or Duck Dodgers.
Yeah, Duck Dodgers too. I think I can explain this real marriage thing.
Okay, good.
In order to do that, we have to go back to July 2012. Now, here's a pop quiz for you, Bob. Who is the premier numero number uno right-wing sabotager in America?
Now, are you talking about someone who is of the right wing and sabotages things, or somebody who sticks in a...
I'm talking about the...
Frank Luntz?
Persuasion. No.
Trying to think of who a real rat effer is. I mean, Andrew Breitbart's dead.
Somebody who's not at the forefront, but constantly is a person who's always making waves at nonsense.
The Savage Wiener?
In order to go to the go-to guy would be Jerome Corsi.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Now, when you put this in context, Jerome Corsi in July was tired of the whole birth certificate. He realized that the gimmick was going south. Or it was running its course. No pun intended. So he decided to come along a new conspiracy that sort of dovetails or coincides with the whole Kenyan birther conspiracy, not foreigner, not one of us, all of that. So what this has to do with is that Corsi has found photos of Obama with an alleged wedding ring before he was married to Michelle Obama. Now, is everyone following?
I think I am.
Okay.
Is this when he was married? Was he married in Kenya?
No. Allegedly, again, Corsi says that Obama was involved with his Pakistani roommate. And this is how he thinks that he thinks that he was engaged to this person somehow, and with proof of the photos, and he goes on and on. He even put a video up on YouTube if you actually can stand watching that. So that's why I think this I would be interested to see who wrote the speech, because I don't think Ann Romney had time to write the speech on her horse.
No, it would be, and that thought crossed my mind too, David. Who wrote this trash?
It would be interesting to know if they would ever come up with the the person who wrote it and see the ties back to Corsi. And here's the other thing to keep in mind. The timeline of talking about real marriage and bringing that up and the fact that this is in the water right now, injected underneath the depths of the right-wing sludge. And it's going.
Oh Jesus! It's like that scene. It's like that scene on the in Ghostbusters when they look down in the sewer and this the river of slime goo. You know, yeah. I got you. I got you.
Well, basically, I mean, I think this all. So Corsi put this out. He put the video on YouTube. He made this completely in-depth, crazy harebrained blog post on his website, where he pulled out satirical columns from the Harvard Law Review and photos. And he just went down the rabbit hole to sell the right-wingers some more snake oil. But I have to hand it to him, because the fact that he got that research turned over like that is... I'm always just, like, very gobsmacked at all the research that he's able to get on people at Harvard who are just... Like, he just calls them up and says, you got anything on Obama? And it's so that's where I would wager the real marriage comment came from, because it fits in with the timeline.
Jeez, I had no idea. See, that's, okay, then can you, okay, so that's where it came from. You want to spin the wheel and tell us who it's aimed at? I mean, so it's, is it a... So I was right. It's aimed at the Obamas. It wasn't aimed. I mean,
it could be. Here's the other thing. It could be multiple entendre, because that's another way the right wing works too. You know, you have an open translation. I remember I was. You know, it's like this. I remember reading an interview with Seal. And I'm bringing this up because I like the guy.
No, see, I trust you. I trust you, David.
Right. I remember reading his, and he said, hey, why don't you print the lyrics? And still had a very simple answer. Because I want you to think whatever it means.
I want... Oh, man. Yeah, that's all. It's all things to all people.
Right,
I mean, there's
right.
There's something there for the peanut throwers. There's something there for the homophobes. I mean, it's just a little toxic rainbow sherbet for everybody. Real marriage. You know, I mean, that means about as much to me as when I'm in the grocery store and I'm choosing between store brand Hellman's and Kraft real mayonnaise.
Right. So
because what Hellman's and the store, those are phony mayonnaise.
Well, you know, this has to do with the fact of and this has been like an ongoing thing with the right wingers. If people aren't aware of this, you should be aware of this now. Is that they've always thought, and there's been certain right-wingers, I can't come up with the names, but give me a few moments, and I'm sure I can come up with some names, who believe that the Michelle Obama marriage was a sham marriage for Obama to run. And this goes back to the whole Obama in a limousine with the... That all ties together, just more gay rumors that they cobbled together somehow to prove that, you know, Obama has aligned himself to have a sham family, sham marriage, and it just all fits together in some crazy quilt work that only the right wing, that only the far right wing can relate to.
They're the only one. Some of us can, like I said, some of us can hear the whistle, but we don't know if it's come to supper or chase the squirrel or...
Right, but I think that's completely what they want to do. They know it can. They know it means something to so many people.
Oh Jesus! I guess the rumors are flying fast and furious. Oh God, not that phrase. I just got an email in from Tim in L.A.
Yeah,
he said on Mark Thompson's show, a teabagger called up and said that Michelle Obama had a half living aborted fetus and threw it in the dumpster in Chicago. Oh, F me. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it's a...
What a day to be out of Thorazine.
Well, you know, the thing about it is that I do, in a certain way, I do envy people who have the right-wing charlatan job where they can just come up with nonsense and then just feed it back to the people that I'm guessing they really loathe and despise, and I'm guessing they don't believe this shit either. I don't think Joseph Farah, World News Daily, if you listen to him, he sounds like a huckster, the way he talks, and Obama is from Kenya.
He does. I've heard him. He does. That's not bad, David. That's pretty respectable when you get to... And he's from Kenya.
And you know another crazy thing is if you listen to Dinesh D'Souza, he reminds me of Marty from The Simpsons. Marge's boyfriend. Yes, we're going to go to a dance.
Oh, Christ, they are cartoon characters.
I know. I mean,
Who opened the gates of Toontown?
I've been taking it heavy this week.
Ah, Jesus, if Willard tells us to be very quiet.
I've been taking it heavy this week for the team. I've been listening to all the Howie Carr interviews at the Republican National Convention. Everyone from John Voight to Sununu.
Maybe I should have taken him up on that offer to do that. It could have been 3 hours a day of lunatics. All I got to do is put in the nickel and let them talk. Yeah, tell us about that Kenyan Muslim with a birth certificate problem and with a hatred of white people and deep-seated distrust of colonialism, Mr. Voight.
One of the most embarrassing ones I heard was not on the Howie Carr show. It was on the Tom Hartman show, and he had Chuck Woolery on.
Chuck Woolery?
Yeah, because he's the one who shills the senior citizens' health care nonsense. He's part of a conservative program, Concerned Senior Citizens for America, or something to that effect. Anyways, he was so rude to Tom when Tom was just like trying to get through a sentence, and Chuck was going da 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 da. He was actually mimicking him, and you know when you put into all the stuff that. I don't know if you heard about Tom Hartman's health scare that he had recently.
No.
It was pretty bad. They had a botched surgery in his abdomen, and he almost died. He learned firsthand, Bob, of what the American health care experience is, and he didn't like it. Surprise, surprise.
God, I had no idea. My heart just goes out to him, and phrases like botched abdominal surgery kind of have a special relevance for me since I've already got a botched abdominal.
Well, you know, the thing about it that I really was like, this is how you know how much of a trooper Tom was. He wasn't even complete, he didn't have the tubes out, and he was calling in from on the phone from home.
You know what? That is being a trooper, but let me also suggest that once this is in your blood.
Yeah. I understand.
I mean, if I'm conscious, I'm trying to get a show out.
Right.
And you know, it's the, remember when and you know it crosses political boundaries too. You remember when he still worked for CNN and the Beckerhead did that rambling Vicodin induced. Screed thing after he'd had his hemorrhoid surgery. You remember that, David?
Yeah.
It's hard not to do, you know. I mean, you've got to have a spouse or a partner or something standing by. No, honey. No, you're on heavy pain medications. God knows what'll. You know, you'll probably go on the air and talk about the nightmares you had of demons on unicycles reciting Henry James. Yeah, don't do it, honey. And that's, you know, Agnes has done that. I feel okay. You know, I haven't had food for 7 days, you know, pain medded out of my mind. Oh, I think I can go do a show. Open your mouth, honey. Oh, look, he swallowed another pill. Good night. But I'm all right.
The amazing thing about it was that he was so eager to get on the air, and he was obviously in a lot of pain. He was calling in from home, I'm guessing on his bed or something, with all these tubes in him, and he even broke down and cried like the first minute of the program, and I was like, wow, this is powerful radio.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I mean, the way he explained he explained his health emergency pretty much straightforward and honest, and it does hit home when you think about the fact that someone like Tom Hartman, a very successful multiple business entrepreneur, I don't know, maybe he's self-made, Bob. I don't know. Maybe he's self-made on one of those businesses, but I doubt it.
Nah, I don't think so.
It was all community-driven. But it does hit home when somebody like that has those health moments, and even he couldn't.
Yeah, and the other thing that happens is anytime you're away from the microphone and you desperately want to, well, all the news hits while you're gone.
Right, right.
And you're sitting there, no, I can get on the air. I got to talk about this. But yeah, I mean, that's why I've been, you know, when I've had my little misadventures with the healthcare mm-hmm. system, you know, remember, I'm still trying to figure out a way to pay off $15,000 worth of an uninsured hospital stay that was 2.5 days long. I mean, I'm a walking, talking, example of what it is, you know, of, you know, life in uninsured America. And that's not me saying poor, poor, pitiful Bob. It's,
right. You know,
I just believe in talking about what's real, David. And it is. And it is for millions of Americans.
Yeah, it's, again, it's, I keep telling people that a lot of people have these health issues and these stories need to be told. They need to be constantly repeated over and over again. If you don't, if there are so many people, that's the part of the problem, because you start to hear a lot of the stories and they're the same ones over and over, but so many people are probably having similar health emergencies right now as we speak, all across from state to state, city to city, town to town. And you know, the problem is a lot of these people have a lot of pride and they don't want to share anything.
Well, yeah, this whole idea that Ayn Rahmani was going to somehow get in touch with middle and lower class women in America, you know, please. I mean, and talking about, you know, and they don't fund school sports anymore. The water polo team, we have to fund that now. All those little Speedos? You know, the fact of the matter is, I heard that and I just wanted to vomit last night, and it wasn't much further away from it because my eldest grandchild,
mm-hmm.
My precious little eldest grandchild is 5 now. Oh, God, she's a heartbreaker. Mm-hmm. And I can say that because you would never imagine that, you know, a 200-plus-pound guy could actually be wrapped around the little finger of a 5-year-old little girl. But no. And lo and behold, she started kindergarten this year. She's gone off to the public schools, and, you know, you really just want to cry. And she hadn't been in school for a week when she was brought home with a little computerized account number, and she has to go out and sell magazines for the school so that they can pay for things that the school funding doesn't pay for.
Mm.
You know, they've got 5-year-olds selling magazines. What the is that?
I remember when we... I'm sure you remember as well. We did the candy fund drives, but that would be for school trips and stuff, not for school supplies.
Well, no, this is for things that the school just doesn't pay for.
Yeah.
Maybe they need new playground equipment or crayons or dry erase markers or something like that. Yeah. Get the little kids out on the streets. And it's not. I mean, this is rural West Virginia. It's not like. I mean, I had to do. We sold candy and stuff like that, right? When I was in school, but one, the school would let you sell it inside school. One,
mm-hmm.
So you know, somebody going, "Hey, give me one of those Nutty Buddies or whatever." Those things were delicious. Did you ever sell those, David? Nutty Buddies?
It's not like you can
buy them in the stores, but they were like
the Little Debbie kind.
No, they were like Goo Goo Clusters without the hateful marshmallow. I hate marshmallows, by the way.
Uh oh.
Yeah, I know.
No marshmallow care packages for Bob.
No.
Take note of that.
Oh, but you know the rest of the family will go wild. But I just can't stand that goo. I don't eat s'mores either. I find them utterly disgusting. So, but anyway, and I lived in a town, and so, you know, if you were selling magazines, you start walking and go door to door, and you take your successes and your failures in stride and whatever. But not out in the middle of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking, you know, damn. Can't one of these godforsaken coal, oil, or gas companies pony up a couple of million bucks so little five-year-olds aren't out there peddling magazines? Broke my heart.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely the world we live in, and it's funny because if we take education more seriously, we could fund all these schools and.
Well, and here's a little dose of reality coming in from Texas Betsy. She says, yeah. "I'm being hired on as a teacher. Mm-hmm. The school curriculum requires a part of the day where we gather the kids on the rug and teach them one of the subjects. I am expected to buy my own rug."
Wow.
Also, the classroom library needs to be sorted into bins. Ask me if I own a classroom library. Okay, Betsy, do you own a classroom library? And we'll wait for the answer. But all of this is by... I keep coming back to it, and I'm afraid I sound like some sort of paranoid maniac.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I get an image of. I get an image of Handmaiden with Bluetooth, Instagram, and... There you go.
Yeah.
That's the picture I get of what the future of America is going to look like.
It's by design is that right-wingers and repiglicans and libertardians and stuff, they hate the idea of public education. You know, it was, what, 20, 25 years ago when Jerry Falwell said, "Education needs to be removed from the hands of government and put back in the hands of religion where it belongs." You know, so that little children can be taught about demons and biology can be all full of information about black bile and ill humors and, you know, a good bloodletting will make you feel all better. Jesus, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a coordinated attack and... It's amazing how many people have completely just turned around and said, just started talking about regarding the public education and school system. And rather not talk about fixing it, well, we have to do more to get rid of it, which is just insane.
Well, I mean, well, you know, you have to, sometimes you have to kill something to make it feel better.
Yeah, I did want to mention something that I don't know if you're aware of, but Bob, I have to start getting you to listen to these podcasts instead of listening to the RNC convention.
But, hey, I only did that for a couple of hours last night. Now lay off.
I mean, but any of these right wingers get transcripts. I mean, I don't want you to have. Dementia early on. Holy cow. Especially right-wing dementia. That's the worst kind.
Well, and, you know, at least next week, I guess we'll get some soaring rhetoric. And But I'm very cynical and jaded, and I don't expect much out of the Democratic convention either.
I don't...
But you know what looks... I'm damned if that room that the Repiglicans are caverning in...
Yeah.
Have you seen any photographs, David?
Yeah, I saw a few photographs.
It's looking kind of empty-ish.
It's going to be interesting to see what if this is going to be is it going to look the same way for the DNC? I have no idea.
I hope not.
I don't. I mean, maybe not, but.
But I really do. I'm not kidding. I want that. I want that news from Jane Romney about how. How Willard won't touch abortion. I want that out all over creation, because that'll, you know, hopefully that'll make the freaks stay home. I mean, I'm all for voting and everything, but, you know, the right wing's doing everything it can to make sure that people who've been voting for, you know, a couple of generations can't even go and vote. You know, witness Juanita's story from last week.
Right.
Then, you know, let's depress a few of these the fetus followers. you know, and God bless America, that stinking the frothy mixture in there talking about how the doctor said to get ready to give her up, but we didn't give her up. Yeah, Bella. At least he didn't talk about the lizard.
Right.
By the way, Texas Betsy updating. No, the classroom library has to be sorted into bins. She said, no bins.
Hmm.
So she gets to provide the bins too.
Wow.
And this is in one of the better off school districts in Texas.
Yeah, I mean it's a lot of problems headed our way. But what I was gonna mention to you was if you haven't listened, people, to any of the Nerdist podcasts, last week in particular, a mix of this week and last week in particular was really, really special to behold. The podcast that I think would interest you primarily the most is the one with Joel Hodgson from Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh.
And one of the things that's one of the revealing bits that he gave away, Bob, and you'll find this really...
Didn't he, get himself in some deep crap not too long back?
I don't think so.
With some sort of off tawdry... well, okay. No, maybe not.
What's amazing right now is he's the lead director for a propulsive engine for a satellite in space.
Beautiful.
And so he's talking about the genesis of the program and how it came to be, the idea. And for anyone who hasn't heard Chris Hardwick, you're doing yourself a disservice, and you should listen to his podcast, because the questions he asks and the knowledge base that he comes from is just absolutely just off the cuff brilliant. And so one of the things that he got out of Joel Hodgson was he was saying how they came up with, you know, the intro scene from Mystery Science Theater 3000 where they show the satellite?
Yeah.
Okay, so the satellite of love, I guess it's referred to as, one of Joel Hodgson's creative designers and directors says, you know what, I've got the idea for the intro for this scene. He goes, you know 2001? He goes, yeah. Remember the scene with the bone? And he's like, yes. And he goes, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take the scene where the ape throws up the bone, and we're going to mix that with the 2001 satellite, and that's the 2001 spaceship, and then we're going to merge those two together, and that's our satellite.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, that's what it is. It's the merging montage of the apes throwing up the bone in 2001 and the spaceship in 2001.
I'll be damned. Hey, we've got a question coming in from Andy for you. We got a pop culture question for you.
Okay.
Andy says, Mr. Bob, since you've got our pop cultural correspondent on, what's up with this Dinesh D'Souza movie, 2016, Obama's America? Is it a right-wing smear job or what? Can David fill in any color?
I'll tell you what. Dinesh D'Souza is a, or as I like to call him, Marty from The Simpsons.
Do the voice again.
You know, if you want to make this into a complete hall of mirrors of characters, Marty, who did the voice of Marty? John Lovitz. John Lovitz has been known to be kind of loopy when it comes to taxes and any situation of Obama that comes up. So there you go on that. But Dinesh D'Souza is an interesting character for a number of reasons. He's kind of a pseudo-respected, or he was at least in the beginning, of a political wonk, so to speak. But as of recent, he's really, really gone to the far edge of the Corsi swamp, as I like to call it. And he's always been that way, but I think what makes Dinesh D'Souza is particularly one to keep an eye on. You see, what people don't understand about the 2016, while you're laughing, they're getting those screenings, and they found those pockets of places of people that will pay money, God knows why, to this movie, and they're actually doing quite good. I don't know what it is. I think they're doing They're doing quite well for a documentary, and that just goes.
Well, I had one of those disgusting right-wing blast emails that I get so frequently, and it was touting the money that this thing has brought in. Here it is. 2016, Obama's America stuns. Top new movie in the nation outpaces Expendables and Bourne for highest per screen average and estimated 6.3 million weekend box office haul. That was last weekend. It's apparently expanded to 1,091 screens.
Right.
Took in $6.3 million produced by... Now, okay, this is funny. You're going to love this. I'm glad Andy brought it up and that you were able to expand on it.
Right.
Produced by Academy Award-winning producer Gerald Molin, who won an Oscar for his work on Schindler's List, and produced hits such as Jurassic Park, Minority Report, and Hook, 2016 was co-written and co-directed by Dinesh D'Souza and John Sullivan, and is based on D'Souza's best-selling books, The Roots of Obama's Rage and Obama's America. D'Souza expressed gratitude for the man, blah, blah, blah. I need to get this to you. So you can do it in the voice. We still live in a consumer-driven capitalistic economy, and if there is a demand, we will do everything we can to meet it with supply, D'Souza joked. Our plan is to do our best to expand this film to as many theaters as the people demand. We'll be taking a close look at various markets and determining where we go next. And then the producer, Gerald Molin, said, all of my movies have been about telling the truth. Really? Jurassic Park was about telling the truth? Hook, that massive flop, Hook, was about telling the truth? Okay.
Well, the interesting thing about the fascination with the 2016 and it's obviously a pseudo birther movie.
Well, I mean, there's a little to answer Andy's question, David. There's a little question down here, or a little blurb down here. 2016, Obama's America was filmed on four continents and features on-camera interviews with those who knew President Obama, including his destitute half-brother George Obama in Kenya and Philip Ochieng, who was a close associate of Barack Obama Sr.
I like the dog whistling synopsis line that they have where they say, exploring the family's roots of exploring Obama's roots to his rage. You know,
I mean, but isn't that there's a term in trial law called assuming it's an objection that a good lawyer makes. It's called assuming facts not in evidence. In
right.
other words, you can't do that. Like Obama's rage, the guy is written up for being the coolest cucumber in the patch.
That's the biggest issue that I have with anyone bringing up anything to do with rage of any Democrats or anything like that when they don't bring up rage of any.
David, that's dog whistling of its own form, because what Obama's rage means to the people being whistled at is Obama's blackness. You know, he's an angry black man, right? Got it? Okay, good. All right, we're square on this.
Right. I think, you know, here's the interesting thing about that movie, is that one of the craziest things I heard about it is there's actually a scene in the movie where it's not even real. It's a depiction, it's a fantasy depiction of Obama. Now, you want to talk about going down the low, low road, Bob? This is the low, low road, and Dinesh D'Souza knows how to completely capture that for the right wing's imagination. So there's a scene in the movie where there's a depiction of, I kid you not, people, Obama at his father's grave, and he's crying. Remember, this isn't Obama. This is a fake Obama. This scene has never happened.
Right. This is a reenactment, right? Hey, you know what I've got here? I don't know if there's any. I don't know how verbal or nonverbal it is, but I just happen to have the trailer here. Shall we make people really sick?
Okay, you should do that.
Okay, here we go. Stand by. Well, that certainly sounds like foreign music.
For a long time, I sat between the two graves and wept. The pain I felt was my father's pain. My questions were my brother's questions. Their struggle, my birthright.
Hope is a dream from his father, that the sins of colonialism be set right and America be downsized.
Wait, what the? Who's downsizing America? Barack Obama or Willard Romney?
on Dinesh D'Souza. This guy, for people who don't know, he is a bona fide ladder climber. He dated Ann Coulter, and he dated Laura Ingraham. Continue with the trailer.
Oh, dear God.
Americans did not know him, and he knew that, too. And he knew people were projecting all of these things onto him.
It's been a long time coming. But tonight, because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America.
Oh, stop it. Wait. There is actually, I know, we're dancing about architecture, we're talking about visuals, but there is actually a scene where a Monopoly board is in play, okay? You got to work with me here, David. I'm going to talk through it. So people are in jail on the Monopoly board, and all of a sudden all these little hands start reaching all over the Monopoly board, and the next thing you know, a whole bunch of black people are overturning a Monopoly board and screaming and fighting with each other. And the next thing is a dissolve to a profile shot of Barack Obama and an Obama 08 sticker. I'm not kidding. Well, let's finish the trailer.
America has a dream from our founding fathers. That together we must perfect liberty, and America must grow.
Little white Boy Scouts, a photo of the Capitol, Dinesh D'Souza walking into the Jefferson Memorial, traffic in Times Square. 16. Dinesh D'Souza looking up to Jefferson, and a little kid in a plaid shirt looking at a tomb somewhere in the woods. Oh, my God. Andy, look where you took us.
You know, the whole thing about this is what's really sad about this is the fact that Tom Hartman has this guy on as a regular guest, and every time someone brings something up and says, "Why do you have that guy on?" he says, "Well, he's a really nice guy," and I just think to myself, "Oh, you gotta be kidding me!"
And because the right wing doesn't have enough airtime to spew its filth, right?
No, it's not just that. I think this has to do with, you know, Tom Hartman has talked for years and years about how he was bullied as a kid growing up in Michigan. And I think back to, does he even realize that Dinesh D'Souza is the complete example of personified as a right-wing bully? And he's not on there to respect you. He disrespects you. He loathes you. You can hear it in his voice. "Well, that was nice to be here, Tom. Anytime."
So much smarter than you.
Yeah.
Ron in Raleigh says, "I like to call 2016 Obama's America the son of Citizens United. This is what they wanted to do to Hillary Clinton. Also, most Republicans called Dinesh D'Souza the N-word behind his back." Signed, Ron in Raleigh. P.S. I just got in. What did I miss? He does that just to torment me. What did I miss?
I'm calling him Marty D'Souza from now on.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, what you need to do is you got to go watch the trailer, and then you got to do the voice with him everything in there is just a great. It's all dog whistling, David. Because I mean, right. You heard the foreign sounding music and the boom, 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 boom. You know, the African drums. I mean, what did they do? Is this the same people? Are these the same people doing the Foley editing on this that did the Harold Call Me with the jungle drums thing in Tennessee?
You know, but Bob, this brings the interesting point about all of this that I was telling you. If you go back 2 or 3 years, I told you that the conservatives were building their own enclave to getting into the Hollywood and documentaries, and I told you they're not going to stop until they get that bona fide hit, that moment of truth where they can say, "There's a Michael Moore," or somebody like him, and they just kept investing money, just money after money after money. And one of the best things I heard about, and I love this description.
Well, I just want to know how much acid they had to invest in, how many cases of raw ether, how many barrels of really rot gut tequila did they have to consume in order to come up with this goofy crap.
Now, I believe Dinesh D'Souza is also, of course, a conservative author, and he's been authoring books since 1991 under Regnery Publishing.
Regnery, yeah.
Judith Reagan's
yeah.
publishing house. But
well, she was sacked, wasn't she?
I guess she was. But this was, if you go back, you can see that, like we always say, Bob, they start them really, 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 really early and young. So they can make them ultra nasty within a decade or less than a decade or so. And into stars, just like what happened with Zombie Coulter and Laura Ingraham to some extent. And it didn't quite pan out with the Malkin girl yet, but thinking they haven't gave up on her. She's not white, so, you know, Bob, it's kind of hard to do.
Oh, God, Onward to Dystopia just sent me a website, Obama's Real Father. Oh, please. Oh, dear God. They are. This is, you know, this is just a walk through the monkey house.
It's not,
you know, the poo right is flinging, you know, there's no glass in front of the walls anymore. It's just out in the splat. Oh, man.
It's not whistling anymore, Bob. It's dog screaming out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dog.
Hey, David, great conversation, my friend. We'll talk soon.
All right, Bob. Later.
Later. Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, another David, the one from way, way across the country here.
We got a lot of Davids.
Yeah, well.
What's happening, Dave?
This is one looking out over the Pacific Ocean up here by near Oregon in Humboldt County. And I hadn't been able to get on the horn, been locked out for 3 or 4 years, and now we're able to talk twice in as many weeks. And so much I appreciate your thinking on so many matters.
Thank you, Dave.
One of the issues I'd hope we have a chance to discuss, I'm sure you are convinced that scientifically we have evolved, that's a sound basis of thought, as opposed to having been designed.
I land on the former, if for no other reason than, you know, I have an appendix and used to have wisdom teeth.
There you go. Right. And so,
you know, CT flies, that's another good, you know, what kind of misbegotten, vicious, hell-spawning god creates the Anopheles mosquito?
I've wondered about that and ticks and some forms of slugs and whatnot that get into our garden.
Yeah, and Republicans.
Republicans, that's evidence in itself, I would think.
Absolutely. There's no intelligent designer creates Republicans.
And, yes, nor does evolution move fast enough to allow them to continue. And that's the main thing that I wonder. Do we have the chance that we can, in this random process, I don't know if it's totally random, there is selection of the fittest, I guess. But
well, you know, Harry was noting in a phone call that Darwin never actually said survival of the fittest. But he said natural selection, and talked about adaptation. And the problem we're running into, Dave, is the dynamics of evolutionary adaptation run exceeding slow, and humanity may very well be outpacing with its ability to kill itself off the ability of natural selection to hang on to some remnant that can then evolve in the circumstance in the natural world in which we live. Make sense?
Well, I know that there's those very excellent minds that share the question, will we make it through our adolescence as a species? You know, we have so escalated our ability, our mechanization. We have...
Yeah, well, and I've heard that as well, Dave. That, you know, that this statement, and it's sort of, you know, it's just metaphoric that humanity is in its adolescence, and I have to what that presumes is that there is sort of an adulthood that's coming when we're going to be better than we are now. But I don't know that I'm ready to do the buy-in on adolescence. Have you ever seen a toddler? Well, I mean, I'm not trying to get graphic during anybody's dinner time or anything, but, you know, toddlers are fascinated with their poo and their pee and turning things over to watch things fall out and reaching for things on tables and doing things that they no that we are this is not humanity's adolescence, Dave. This is humanity's toddlerhood.
Well, you're speaking now of Republicans.
Oh no, all of us. I mean, all humanity generally. Because, I mean, you know, Republicans, to be fair, Republicans are not the first people to unleash hell on earth. You know, it's a question of perspective, and it comes back to what that beautiful passage by Carl Sagan about the pale blue dot saying, you know, on that little tiny mote of dust in a sunbeam has resided every general, every ambitious businessman, everything, you know, everybody who ever wanted, want, desire to grab, ambition, all on a mote of dust in a sunbeam, and it comes to naught.
Well, I'm hoping for some basis for optimism from you, because I know you have exceeded the toddlerhood and that you've reached...
No. I'm still pulling jars down on top of my head. Trust me, Dave.
Well, damn.
But no, I mean, there is cause for optimism. I mean... There are good things going on, but the problem is, I mean, for instance, tune into any for-profit media any day on the TV, and you'll see eventually some science report. I mean, it's kind of cool what they did the other day with the Curiosity space rover, or Mars rover, okay? They beamed a message from NASA's administrator to Curiosity, and then they instructed Curiosity to beam it back to Earth. So we got a granted it was pre-recorded and everything, but we got a verbal, vocal, streamed message from Mars, and that's pretty inspiring. Hell, the Curiosity rover is pretty inspiring. It's all the oxygen's being sucked out of the inspiration room right now. However, by the constant vomitous river of filth flowing out of Tampa. But there's cause for inspiration, but when you see stories about medical advances and advances in stem cell technology and gene therapy and this and that, the first thing that comes to my mind now, Dave, when I hear that is, well, look, there's another technology that will not be available to the hoi polloi. There's another technology that will be reserved 100 years from now to the 1% living in the bubble cities.
So, at least on this ability, scientific mechanization, we have well exceeded our developing or evolving social skills. And we now have submarines under the ocean, any one of which can take out 2 or 3 continents. We have that kind of military advancement. So if we are still toddlers playing with our butts, we've got an awful lot of power within our grasp that we need to manage. Yeah, I say that there's a question, are we going to be able to survive our whatever period, maybe puberty, give us some level of maturity. But
yeah. No, I mean, for those of us who grew up on things like Star Trek, you know, there's this future where we, especially Star Trek Next Generation, not the Star Trek where Jim Kirk runs around the universe looking for green women to look at him and say, "Keesing? What is this keesing? Give me another of those keeses, Jim Kirk." No, the Star Trek world where, you know, Picard goes home to get a new heart genetically grown for him and then goes back into space to go and not be mean to people. It's a hopeful vision. It's a very hopeful vision. But thus far, all it is a vision, because there's ever so much stuff to point to the fact that we ain't gonna make it.
Well, see, if there's not any kind of inherent built-in purpose, meaning, and the acorns fall and roll and land where they land, and that we are able to grow. Or not grow, depending on whether there's rain or the puddle or whatever, then we have the question of, do we have the means to acquire in time that kind of Roddenberry morality of the ability to avoid our destruction before we push a button and destroy ourselves.
But see, at this point, you kind of give away the time of your upbringing. And what I mean by that is you say push a button and destroy ourselves. At this point in time, I'm not worried about pushing a button and destroying ourselves nearly as much as I am by the idea, because that is an adolescent thing, Dave. You know, oh, screw you, I'll just, we'll all go together. Push the button. A toddler thing to do, however, is to lack the basic human perceptive qualities that allow you to know that the house is on fire. You know, or not to stick your finger in the light socket, or to stick your finger in the electrical outlet. That's why they make those little plastic plugs that, you know, when you go to bed, when you've got a new one in the house, new baby in the house that started to crawl and move around a little bit, you baby-proof the house. You get baby gates and those little things that you put in outlets that don't have stuff plugged into them, because they just don't know better. And right now, if you look at issues, for instance, I'm more worried about the planet becoming uninhabitable for humans than I by processes of climate catastrophe than I am about humans pushing down the button. That's not to say that nuclear disaster is not something to be feared. Good God, all we have to do is look at Fukushima. You see what I'm saying? I'm worried that by virtue of our ignorance, we're liable to eat ourselves out of house and home. I mean, how many human beings, Dave, can this planet support? We're at what? How many billions of humans on this planet?
Seven, I guess.
And we Americans and we in the so-called developed world tend to assume by virtue of the fact that we're eating okay, that the rest of the planet is, and the fact of the matter is, it ain't. We're eating okay because others aren't.
I'm old enough that I can recall when there was worry among thinking people that the planet was reaching 4 billion. That was a scary time, that there was only so much water and so much.
Right. I mean, and you know, we've got extraction industries in coal and natural gas and oil that are using up water faster than it can be generated. I mean, it's scary business when you get down to the business of really, really thinking about it. I mean, it's mind blowing and more than a little bit disturbing.
Yeah, I feel it's, you know, in a selfish way, it's a good time to be growing old, that it's frightening for the younger generation. You know, it can worry for them, but I don't think we're going to be there to see the devastation that mankind has brought upon himself.
Oh, we may not. We may not. That may be left for my grandkids or their grandkids.
That's scary.
But I think a lot of the scientists are saying sooner rather than later. And I admit to a certain degree of morbid fascination. When you go to a fireworks display, I learned about this reading Kurt Vonnegut again. When you go to a fireworks display, at the very end, after they've, you know, teased you with a few shells here and a few shells there, at the very end, they just set it all off and just boom, 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 you know, and everything explodes and they play John Philip Sousa music and all of that stuff, Dave, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that is called the finale rack. And there's something in me that wants to see what our finale rack consists of, just because I'm a lover of information. Or maybe because I'm a vindictive prick who wants to say, see, you bastards did it. You dumb bastards. We warned you and you did it. Yeah. I don't know what it is. And maybe by the time I get a little bit older, I won't want to. I don't know. But there's enough, cranky old Scots-Irish left in me that I want to stand up and say, I object. I don't like you doing this to me. You know, it's why I'm motivated to work with some other incredibly motivated people to try to stop the destructions of our homes and communities and very lives themselves and futures, for that matter, here in Appalachia.
I know there's enough of a humanist in the Bob Kincaid that I've come to know that would want very much to see us survive this period and make it into some kind of a, whatever has been fantasized, of an advanced civilization on the starship.
Yeah.
But, the odds seem to be against it. There's just too many ways that we can inflict devastating harm on ourselves and the planet that we're occupying. I often wonder, even the neocons must be aware that they're living on the same planet that they're so actively involved in destroying. They don't know if they live there in West Virginia where they're taking down their mountaintops, but certainly where the climate change is affecting us all over the planet. Do they think that they will just simply be allowed to take off in a spaceship and live happily somewhere?
No, they think that they will reserve the necessities of life to themselves. I mean, remember, this recently nominated candidate for the presidency of the United States thinks that he's got another planet waiting for him. His theology, Dave, tells him he's got another planet waiting for him.
You think he buys into that? I imagine it's possible.
He's a bishop in their church. He has to buy into it. He threatened a woman with excommunication because she wouldn't give up her baby for adoption by the Mormons. This guy's a monster. So, the idea that they will marshal all the resources unto themselves and leave us to just exist in some sort of chaos. See, the right wing is forever blaming on our side the things they want to do themselves. It's called projection and transference.
Yes, indeed. Very accurate insight, Bob.
And so when they show documentary film clips of people rioting in the streets in the global south, and they say that that's what Obama wants for America, what they really mean is that's what they intend for America. You know, go and rent the sci-fi thriller from the early 70s, Soylent Green, before Charlton Heston turned into a complete asshole.
Yeah. I would share with you one thought that I hope, it gives me some hope. Robert Ingersoll was a philosopher that I valued immensely. He's not more well-known in the world, but he had one little poem that was the philosophy of the self-actualizing personality, and he was one. And it was that the only good is happiness. And the time to be happy is now. The place to be happy is here. And the way to be happy is to help make other people happy.
That makes an abundance of sense to me.
Yeah.
If you could get a buy-in on that from a majority of the people in this country, this would be a different country overnight.
Those that are making $5-10 billion a year and wanting more and wanting to take it from the people who have the least, they're not going to experience much in the way of that kind of peace of mind, joy, happiness. They will take a lot. It'll supplement, but
right, because I mean, you can make the argument, Dave, that while Willard Romney has millions upon millions upon millions of dollars, if not billions, that, you know, does he own the money or does the money own him? Because and you know, the old myth of Midas comes into play. You know, Midas was so hungry for gold that when given a wish, he wanted everything he touched to turn to gold. Or maybe he was cursed with that by the gods. I forget which. But he was so hungry for gold, he wanted everything he touched to turn to gold. And lo and behold, he forgot that it meant that everything means everything. And he went to touch those he loved, and they just turned to gold. And it had no meaning. and he found himself alone and unloved.
And I do think that awaits an awful lot of the people that are on the board of directors of Lockheed Martin, and Halliburton, Bechtel.
The Mark writing in via email, Dave, offering this little piece of, this is rather a Zen look at things. Mark says, we don't need to manage our power. We need to let go of it.
We as a people.
We as a species.
Well, I think if you're specifically referring to those who are the neocons who are wielding it so badly right now, yes, but getting them to see that, I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I think Mark is speaking from the species survival standpoint. It is a fundamental truth that comes down to us through the centuries, through the millennia, through the ages, that power never cedes power voluntarily. It has to be taken from them. And it can either be taken incrementally or it can be taken from them wholesale. You can have you can have, for instance, the very modest changes that came around in the New Deal, or you can have the October 1917 revolution when people were put up against walls and machine gunned. But power is either taken gently and rationally, or it is taken by brute force by people who then merely replace themselves in the oligarchic structure, and that's the thing that we always have to guard against. Dave, it's been a wonderful and thought-provoking conversation. I hope we will have another one.
I will soon, and I so value your input, Bob. I really do much, and yes, I will try to get back to you as soon as it's so much that you have a wisdom to share with us.
Well, I don't think as much of my wisdom as you do, but I tell you what, I appreciate that you do, Dave.
A lot of your audience, too, they bring something to bear that's worth hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. You have a good evening. Take care. Bye now. Our good friend of long standing, that's Dave from Humboldt County. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, this is a first-time caller into the show. My name is Sergi from Fort Worth, Texas.
Oh, hey, Sergi. Are you from the chat room, Sergi?
Yes, Bob, I am.
Okay, great. Wonderful to hear from you. You will survive this call, I promise.
I've called into progressive talk shows before, and the first thing, you know, that I want to say is, you know, this is one of the best progressive talk shows I've listened to. I first discovered progressive talk in 2005, actually, when I was tuning through an AM radio, my alarm clock radio, and I discovered what used to be a progressive talk station here in DFW, 9:10 a.m. And that's
for those who don't get the code, DFW, I assume, is Dallas-Fort Worth?
I tend to talk like everybody knows what it is, so my apologies.
Well, you Texans are all like that, you know. No, I'm sorry I interrupted. Go ahead.
The reason I stopped on the station is because it was about 10 a.m. and I swore I heard Jerry Springer's voice. That was back when he was still had his progressive talk show, and I was thinking, is that Jerry Springer? And so I turned back the radio and started listening. And I had gotten interested in politics the year before with that election, and, you know, I started listening. I listened to that station the rest of the day, and I was like, well, shoot, I wish I had discovered this sooner. And I've been listening to it ever since, and I recently discovered the horn, started listening to this show. But anyway, on to my point is basically what I've observed with the Republican Party recently is just there's always been a section of the American population that has been so resistant to change, whether it be social, demographic, whatever kind of change, they've been so resistant to it that they almost take a sociopathic kind of violent tendency towards it. And I first observed that, you know, hearing in history class about in the 1950s when the modern suburbs started developing because, you know, black people were gaining more rights than, you know, the racist white people in the city says, oh, there goes the neighborhood, and they move further out.
Yeah, I mean, there was a word for it. It was called white flight.
And what I find sad is how the Republican Party started out being the progressive party on that, and they just sort of flipped in recent years. And I've noticed that slowly, even over the course of my short 20 years on this planet, is that I've noticed that the Republican Party has started embracing what used to be just a small faction of their party. They've been causing all the moderates to jump ship, and now that small faction has become the dominant faction of the party. They've represented the party.
That is the absolute truth, Sergi, and let me take it one step further, if I may, and that is to say that the weirdos, you know, the inmates took over the asylum, which is what I think you're saying. But what is even stranger is that there are some people within that, if we're looking at a Venn diagram of it, there's a subsection of weirdos who were too weird even for them, and they became the teabaggers. Fair enough, you think?
Shoot, I mean, I'd take it even further and say that the teabaggers are now pretty much going to become the next mainstream of the Republican Party.
Oh, I absolutely agree. They're certainly driving the agenda of this little clavern they're having in Tampa, aren't they?
And the reason I called in about this subject is because of that story that you mentioned earlier in the show. I tuned in about an hour in, but, you know, I heard you mention the peanut incident that happened with the CNN staff member. That would have never happened in the Republican Party of 1960s, 1970s. Sure, there were people in the party back then that felt that kind of attitude, but they would not have been comfortable.
Exactly.
Like, just doing, just, because it's one thing to have a fantasy or a want to do something. It's one thing to want to do something and another thing to feel bold enough to do it.
Yes.
Yeah. Whoever threw those peanuts felt bold enough, there are more people like me around in this party now. Maybe I can get away with it. Toss. And it's pretty much what happened. You know,
what's interesting, I think CNN tried to run away from that story as fast as they possibly could, Sergi. But it got out there, and they had to acknowledge it. What's interesting is that, you know, the Republican Party has nothing if not a talent for excuse-making. And I saw nothing. I read a number of accounts of this, and I saw nothing saying, well, you know, they were intoxicated and they were asked, you know, it just said they were thrown out. It didn't say they were drunk. So I'm having, and I realize that I'm making a certain assumption here. I'm under the impression that these Republicans who did this were stone cold sober.
Oh, I'm sure of it. I mean, you know, I'm sure of it. That's their, well, first off, I don't think drunk people I've read about the tight convention controls, how you can't even bring umbrellas in, never mind the fact that it was probably pouring, raining in Tampa.
Yeah, they couldn't bring umbrellas, but they could bring guns. Do I have that right?
Oh, yes, they could bring guns, although I'm not sure about the drunk thing. I'm not sure if they would be allowing people who are visibly drunk or with alcohol to enter simply because, you know, they don't want the cameras to see all that.
Right, that wasn't even an example. Oh, they were liquored up. It happens. No, these were stone-cold, sober racists. Which is generally, going back to your original point, well made, the mainstream of the Republican Party. I mean, then, you know, then when they started their, did you see the video footage of it? When they started their USA, USA chant when the Puerto Rican lady came on stage?
I heard about that. I heard about it. I saw a link to the video, but I didn't. There's some things that I just can't watch. I couldn't bring myself to click the link, but I did read all about that. It's kind of reminiscent of '08 when I think it was Sarah Palin making a speech and she mentioned Barack Obama and somebody in the audience yelled, kill him or something like that.
Was it Palin's speech correct? Yeah, but I remember the incident. But this is the general course of their conduct. And their conduct includes, things like, these things, Sergey, blow past us so fast we are prone to forget them. But let's remember that at the State of the Union address, a lily-white South Carolinian member of the House screamed at the President of the United States, "You lie!" And don't you think if he could have gotten away with "you lie" N-word, he would have? And then went out, the cherry on top of the dung heap of all of that is that he then went out and raised $1 million or more for his fundraising campaign for having done that. It's amazing to behold, isn't it?
What I found, because I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, just out on walks or on the bus or out on the bike or whatever, and I've spent a long time thinking about this. A lot of the reason why this sociopathic, racist, xenophobic, homophobic, et cetera, crowd, they've always been around. But, over the course of human society, since the beginning of human society, change has been gradual, most of it. It's almost, you would look at a graph of change, it would be almost like the graph of human technology with. It starts off just raising kind of gradually, with people finally accepting that the earth is round or, that it's wrong to do this to the slave, but you can still have a slave, et cetera. It was these little minor reforms, but then in the last century and especially the last few decades, the rate of social change has skyrocketed. Look at how much faster the LGBT rights movement is achieving, we're getting closer and closer to that elusive goal of equality than the civil rights movement, the African American civil rights movement. It's going faster. Change is accelerating, and because change is accelerating, these people, that hostile minority is becoming more and more vocal and bringing more and more people into their ranks who are afraid to see that change, who may otherwise have stayed still, but they see all this change and they feel emboldened to scream about it now, especially now that we have a black president.
Absolutely. And the other thing that plays into that, I think, and it must be remembered, is I think way, way, way down on a deep level, and maybe it's bubbling to the surface too, Sergey. But there is a very deep level understanding that the population itself is changing. We know for a fact that this is not going to be a white majority nation anymore in what, 20 years? And so that racism motivates these freaks as well by insofar as they say, listen, we set up all these things like Social Security and Medicare, to take care of our own. We darn sure don't want them to have it, so let's take it apart right now. Make sense?
I never would have thought of it that way. I never would have thought of that particular thing, but it makes sense. It really does. When it comes to the demographics changing, the Republican Party, they're appealing to the lowest common denominator via these dog whistles that you've been mentioning. They're appealing to the lowest common denominator of people who are that they're afraid of change. They're afraid of this change.
Well, consider the fact that Ayn Rahmani, on the heels of her stirring real marriage speech last night, went off to lecture the Latino vote today. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but she said, and she was addressing herself, trying to Hispanic potential Hispanic voters, and she said, and she can't help it. This is another one of those parts of privilege where the privileged don't understand that they are, so they feel this privilege sorry, I'm overworking the word, but they feel this privilege to go ahead and lecture people that they feel to be inferior to them. So this is, you know, this is what she said to Hispanic voters. You'd better really look at your future and figure out who's going to be the guy that's going to make it better for you and your children, and there's only one answer. It really is a message that would resonate well if they could just get past some of their biases that have been there from the Democratic machines that have made us look like we don't care about this community. See, the problem isn't that the Republican Party has policies that are overtly detrimental to the health and well-being of the Hispanic community. It's that the Hispanic community has a problem. You know, once again, we're off in psychology land, and we're talking about projection, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
I mean, you know, from her "you people" comment to her "we have a real marriage" to "they need to get past their biases."
It almost reminds me, some of the upper class parents here in the, you know, Dallas Fort Worth Metroplex who, you know, and I've witnessed this firsthand, when I've made the mistake of riding my bike through upper class neighborhoods, you know, I've observed this kind of behavior and this kind of dialogue. You know, it's like kind of, tut, tut now, don't cross Lemon Avenue because those people live on the other side.
Those people, right. Yeah.
Exactly.
God almighty.
And you know, as far as that dog whistle, eventually that dog whistle is going to start turning into a microphone. That microphone is going to start turning into a loudspeaker. It's going to get to the point, you know, probably once we cross that line of becoming the majority minority country, the party's just going to go off the deep end. And at that point, unless they seriously put a stop sign on that and move back towards the center, they're going to fall off the right end of the political spectrum and go the way of the Whigs.
And I think again that they perceive that, and they have no idea. They figure they better just burn it down rather than, you know, let those people have it. I'm convinced of it. Sergi, it's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you very kindly, and I hope it will not be your last call.
Oh, it definitely won't. I'm listening every day. If I can't listen live, I'm listening to the podcast.
Well, thank you kindly, and, you know, tell your friends and neighbors.
I definitely am. Like, I wish I had enough money to donate, but I'm spreading the word. I'm thanking you for this service, and, you know, you deserve to be on satellite radio, you know, all the way, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I'd love it, but as it is, we'll until the call comes, or Ed McMahon shows up in ghostly form at the door with the check or something, we'll keep doing it this way. And because, you know, we can host a lot of listeners, and we got more space. So thank you, Sergi, and you have a wonderful evening.
You too. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for calling. Bye now. Love new callers. I love it when the conversation expands. And don't tell me for a minute that when folks up north hear a southern accent talking progressive politics, they don't. You know, I was talking with Dave in California about hope. Well, you know, there's reason for optimism. Remember what I've said before. Progressives below the cornbread curtain, behind the cornbread curtain, progressives behind the cornbread curtain could teach a lot of America about what it means to stand up for principle. Just say it. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
How are you?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Oh, I'm just flipping back between the conviction and Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. I did hear part of John McCain's speech, and he was being interviewed by Candy Crowley.
Yeah.
And she is definitely an example that you should not wear white before Labor Day. My God, when she turned her back, you could show how the West was won on her backside.
You're wicked.
I know. I know.
I thought you were going to go for the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man reference myself, but I think How the Westerns Won was that. God, that's. Oh, you got me.
Normally she's in black and stuff like that, but she had this white blazer that went down, far enough to cover her rear end, but I said, oh my God, what in the world is she up to? I mean, she needs to really talk to somebody about that, about her fashion statement. But, when I heard McCain talking, he was going on about defense and stuff like that. But, I mean, these Tea Party people, they have outdistanced John McCain. I mean, the people who were representing the Republican Party back in 2008, who were even slightly moderate or centrist, they're gone. And it's the Tea Party people who have taken over this convention.
I'm surprised that McCain was even willing to speak.
Well, it was basically the same John McCain, and, I know John McCain, and I know what to expect from him, but these Tea Party people and their leaders, I mean, they have taken control of the Republican Party. I mean, let's face it, Ronald Reagan or George Bush.
Or Richard Nixon would not be welcome in that party.
I don't think even Bush, too, would be welcome in that party.
Well, he's damn sure not welcome in that convention. Have you noticed?
Yeah, I know. I know, exactly. And so, but I guess the next speaker is going to be the vice presidential nominee, and God only knows what he's going to say. But the whole thing is very beguiling. I mean, Mrs. Romney's speech last night, it was a good speech. No question about it. It was a good speech, and it was very appealing. I mean, if you want to look between the cracks and stuff like that, I mean, it appeals to the masses. These people in this convention are younger. They are very much motivated and energized. And the fact that, most of them are younger rather than older will speak to the strength of this particular convention and what they're trying to accomplish. They are indeed worthy adversaries, or unworthy adversaries, whichever you want to call it.
Let's make up a neologism, Jim. They're adversaries.
Well, let me say this. They are possessed of an entirely different mindset, and they are progressing towards some type of future in which... Well, let's just face it. It's extremely, on the surface, attractive to a lot of people. And they're really hammering hard on, the employment things under Obama and stuff like that, the continued rate of 8% and stuff like that. And I mean, they have pulled out all the stops. In spite of the hurricane that is destroying part of a certain parish in Louisiana,
yes,
that wasn't able to benefit from the federal monies for a levy, but nonetheless, I mean, they're driving their point home.
They are, and with tongue planted firmly in cheek. Irish Dave has chimed in on your comment about Candy Crowley's couture. Didn't Jim read the rules of the RNC? All white is the order of the day.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've often heard, that you don't wear white after Labor Day, but apparently she
ought not wear it before.
No, I don't think she should. And there's just something about her that's just incredibly... redolent of who's our favorite woman who used to be on the court TV system? What was her name? The prosecutor.
Nancy Grace?
Nancy Grace, yeah. I mean, whenever I see Candy Crowley and hear her, she reminds me of Nancy Grace. And I don't know where Nancy Grace has gone. I think she's kind of gone the way of the dodo. I mean, I don't hear a whole lot from her, but I mean, there's just a certain amount of mean-spiritedness toward some of these people. And the fact that CNN has designed what they call the CNN Grill.
Ooh.
This cafe. Yeah, they have a cafe outside the convention. And it's called the CNN Grill, where they have chairs and stuff like that, and they have a bar, and I guess they're serving food and drinks and stuff like that. I guess they are. It would look, to me, though, as they are.
Wow.
Please correct me if I'm wrong.
No. I haven't watched much coverage at all, Jim, but what I did, I went over to MSNBC for, and even that's a little off-putting, you know, with... bless your heart, Rachel Maddow sitting there, you know, kind of chewing at the insides of her cheeks, trying to keep from saying something snarky because she's on her best behavior because it's, you know, network time. To see her say, well, that was a very good speech from Ann Romney, and thinking, really? I mean, come on, Rachel, please, the real marriage comment, somebody get on this.
On the level of speech that was used and the type of rhetoric that was used was not designed to appeal to a certain level of intelligence.
Nor was it it was red meat and dog whistling with an overlay of pasta and tuna. Jesus.
Well, whatever, but I mean, I've heard speeches like this before in history that sounded really good, that were filled with irony and sarcasm, and of course they had a veneer of well-meaning and appeal to certain people, and I think you know who I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
And of course, I have marveled at the content and the mastery of the delivery of these speeches by, you know, Adolf Hitler, for example. Incredible. Moving. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. If I had been a member of that audience back in those days, he probably could have swayed me. Because, you know, it was just designed in that way to appeal to the masses, and you know, we need to realize the understatement in some of these speeches, and of course the window dressing which they provide. I mean, that's all this convention is about. That's what all conventions are about, as far as I'm concerned, is basic window dressing. When they get these people together, whether a Democrat or whether they're a Republican, they hoot and holler and announce for this state and that and the other. To me, it's just almost is, how can I say this without being offensive? It's almost is, it's gotten to the point of being ridiculous.
To use the common parlance, it has jumped the shark. This whole thing is a theater of the absurd. There's no doubt about it.
I mean,
waiting for Godot makes sense.
But it's not even good theater. You know, it's not.
No, it's...
It's not even good theater. I mean, you know...
Well, I've been steeping in the 14th century for a while. Mm-hmm. I could also make the observation, Jim, that this is some sort of right-wing dance macabre.
Well, I mean, hell, the rallies they used to hold at Nuremberg with all the searchlights around the field were better done than some of this stuff.
Maybe they've got a ways to go yet. Or maybe they, you know, you said it's designed to reach a certain intelligence level. Maybe what you're witnessing or what you're feeling, Jim, is the fact that they're aiming at an audience that ain't up to your intellectual snuff, my friend.
Well, I'm not trying to be pseudo-sophisticated.
No, no, I was not suggesting that you are.
But, I mean, you know,
But when newspapers are written with a level of English that is supposedly the really intellectual stuff is at a seventh grade level, what does that tell you about the quality of broadcast?
So, exactly. And that's the reason I called tonight. And I just thought I would comment on my assessment of what I've seen of the conviction in Tampa, and also my best wishes go out to those people in the Gulf, and I certainly hope that they can realize that they need to have the federal government build levees that encompass just more than the perimeter of New Orleans, because those people are really hurting tonight, and my heart goes out to them.
Indeed, indeed. Jim, thank you very much.
You take care.
You too. Bye now. And I realize time is short, but let's try to get one more call in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, I'm sorry.
Not a problem. We can do this in a couple minutes. Just
okay.
A couple of main quick points. Dinesh D'Souza, that movie, you know, the right is constantly co-opting what progressives has done, and they were really troubled by Fahrenheit 9/11 and all of the political energy that came around through that. And now they've been, you know, kind of playing catch up with all of our documentaries that we've got floating around out there. So 2016, they're hyping it as best they can.
Had to have some sort of a number, didn't they?
Yes. But it was wonderful to see the Young Turks. What's it, Cenk?
Cenk.
Young?
Cenk.
Cenk. Okay, Cenk. And his last name?
Uygur.
Uygur. Okay, he interviewed D'Souza a couple nights ago and was having none of it, none of his nonsense. He wasn't letting his rhetoric and his posturing intimidate him, and he was just laughing in his face at times. And then I think it was Cenk who made the point that, you know, they're saying Obama, he's anti-colonialism. Ooh. And, you know, the guy on the Young Turks is like, you know, the founding fathers
were anti-colonial.
Right. Colonial. Yeah, that's right. So people might want to try to find that exchange.
I bet it's on YouTube. I'm glad you brought it up.
I think it is. And one last point. We were talking about making good stuff more accessible to people and how that's so much of our job as activists and concerned people. The Zen Education Project, I've read this story that they put up on their website, A People's History in Prison. Inmates at the Federal Correction Institution, Cumberland Camp, have organized a study course for which they will be using A People's History of the United States. Cumberland FCI is a minimum security penitentiary located in Maryland. The Zen Education Project donated copies of Howard Zinn's book to each of the 20 prisoners taking the course.
Awesome. Do you know? Can I throw in a piece of trivia on that real quick?
Sure thing.
That's the prison where Lindy England was a guard. May still be.
Interesting.
Remember Lindy? Maybe somebody will pass her a copy of it along the way.
That would be great. Definitely.
Preston, have a wonderful evening. Thank you very kindly. I'm sorry this had to be so quick. We will have a more extended conversation soon, I hope.
You bet.
Bye.
Bye.
Whoa, it is time to get out of here, and time for me to make a happy announcement in the last remaining seconds of the program. We've beaten the Swede. We've made the fundraising goal for the month of August. Thank you, everyone who put us over this evening. And for those of you who want to match, we've got $50 to go on John's challenge that beats the Swede and creates a little bit of a cushion. But there will be no fundraising on the Thursday, Thorn in the Side Thursday, or Friday on the front porch. Cool, huh? Thanks, everybody. Thank you. And thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColRiverWind.org, and AkeAct.org, AkeAct.org, and always,